Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite AfterBuzz TV after show begins, I'm so excited to tell you that my new cookbook is out. It's called The Every Girl's Guide to Cooking. It's the quickest, fastest, easiest, most amazing recipes for kitchen newbies and chefs alike. Please check out MariaMenounos.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Good evening, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to the People vs. O.J. Simpson American Crime Story After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. I am your host, Pegarad. You can find me on Twitter at Pegarad. I'm joined by the lovely
Stephanie Georgie. You can follow me on Twitter at Stephanie Georgie.
Shaka Smith. You can follow me at Shaka Strong on Twitter and Instagram.
And Chris Howard. You can follow me Twitter and Instagram at Chris Howard Live, as well as LegendaryLivingDaily.com for tips, motivation, different types of things, and LegendaryLivingTV.com.
We also have a very special guest with us today, Angel Parker, who plays Sean Chapman. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for having me and for teaching me how to Snapchat.
Yeah, we got you in there.
She just snapped.
She did.
It's like it's difficult. It was like Twitter for me because Twitter, I could not understand for the life of me the culture of it for like 3 years. And then I got it. And Snapchat's a little bit difficult too, but you'll get the hang of it.
I just feel like I have so many. I'm like, I have to learn another one. Exactly. And then it disappears. And I'm like, where did it go?
Oh, yes. Now she's 30. Oh, my God.
Look at you.
I apologize. I was going to say.
I'm proud. I'm 35. I don't care.
Okay, well, I turned 46.
They put it on line anyway, how old you are.
That's why I was making fun of him because he'd be doing stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't care. I mean, you could get slapped by somebody else, but I don't care. I'm 35. Proud of it. I got two kids. I'm a grown woman.
What?
Yes. Follow me on Snapchat.
See, I'm wondering if for every 10 years your ability goes down.
Oh, I don't know. Snapchat. My kids just fix things for me now, too, so it's fine. I've totally turned into that cliche. Mom.
So today we're going to be talking about episode 8 titled A Jury in Jail. And boy, did it seem like they were in jail. Yeah. That is crazy. I had no idea that being sequestered was like jail.
Yeah.
It's really crazy.
It was really nice to see that side of it though, because we really had been focused on the trial the entire time, but like there's just this whole other thing that was going on, you know? We forget about the story as a whole.
Yeah, and the gamesmanship. I just love the idea of how they were kind of gaming the system.
Right?
And back, just playing with the jury, not even the facts of the case.
Exactly.
I love that, yeah.
Everything that was happening, I felt like they were snipers. Like just picking the jury off. Taking different jury members out.
But they do that in real trials.
Yeah,
I mean, the jury is who gives you your verdict. So they definitely do that. And there's, you know, people that's their whole job is to pick the jury and to assess who's going to, you know, be beneficial to the defense or the prosecution. So, I was excited that they did an entire episode about the jury. I think it's important.
It was really eye-opening. I mean, I had no idea what that whole process was like, so it definitely shed some light on that. But it was so funny how, you know, it showed day 124, but then we quickly go back to 8 months prior, where they're like, I get to watch football, raid the mini-fridge.
You're in a hotel.
Well, it was, fancy hotel. It was the trial of the century. People knew that. People were trying to get on that jury, so it was the big hot thing, but you don't realize what that means.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, I'm going to be famous. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do all this stuff. And it's like, no, you're going to be stuck in a hotel room for 8 months. So, you know.
Do you think they had any idea that they were going to be there for almost a year of their life when they were going into it?
Yeah, nobody did.
That's
nobody
ridiculous.
Did. And honestly, I swear half of it, they just wanted to go home by the end. I mean, they've said that. It just was like, can I please go home and get the F out of this courtroom, you know?
Perfect example, Cuckoo at the end.
Tracy.
Oh, I know. I know. Little Aaliyah, I call her.
She does look like it.
She does look like Aaliyah. She's beautiful and smart and sweet. And so I'm so glad they gave, because the jury, the actors that played the jury, they were there for the duration of our filming.
Wow.
And then they shot that episode at the end because we were kind of over time. And you lose a lot of actors, of the main actors, especially like John Travolta, you lose him because he's, you know, contracted for a certain amount of time. So they shot that at the end. So it was very cool that, to see what they did and what, you know, lines they got and how they got, you know, and how they divided it all up. And so it was very cool. And we got to know them. We all became such a family by the end. So it was very cool to see all of them.
Yeah. I wish all of you were with us while we were watching this episode because we were pausing like crazy because we had
pause that, rewind it, you know.
Everyone was like, what?
Well, it's better than when I'm at home and I'm like, wait, pause, rewind, wait, pause it on me, wait, screenshot, you know, so. Because it's like remembering it all, plus we shot a lot out of order, and so. That one scene at the very beginning of this episode where we're toasting.
Let's talk about that.
With John Travolta, we're toasting Robert Shapiro and the glove and how successful that was for the defense. And we shot that scene almost at the end of shooting. I think it was one of John's final 2 or 3 days. So we were really sort of toasting the show and like we were all very much just having a good time. It was at the end of filming that we were kind of all together still. Wow. The dream team, because then you sort of scatter and do little individual scenes.
Did John ever break out of character? Was he kind of holding that Shapiro stance?
Oh, no. He's a sweetheart. Yeah, of course. He's like that uncle that you want to sit next to at Thanksgiving. You know, he's like going to tell you cool stories, going to be really funny and sweet. You know, he's the best.
He seems like a nice guy.
He's a great guy. And his whole team that surrounds him, they're all just wonderful. So, you know, when you're sort of looking into those blue eyes, like after a while, you know, first you're just like, oh my God, that's John Travolta. Oh my God.
Yeah, I
would
have been like, hey, Zuko, baby.
I know. And, you know, you want to dance with him and you want to sort of do it, which you do all that by the end. You know, he's just lovely and warm and sweet and generous and...
Now I'm curious. Did we announce and did I have like a mind space time zone where I went into? Did we say what role you had and everything?
Oh yes, of course.
We talked about
on it.
Peg
on top
it.
Of
I
Ed.
I don't know where I went.
Yes,
I was Twilight Zone.
I play Sean Chapman, one of the Dream Team lawyers, one of the only female members of the. Of the defense.
Yeah. Okay.
There was another female member, but she didn't make it into our show. I don't know why. There's not enough chairs.
So the defense team's cheersing, but then on the other side, we have the people. We have Gil Garcetti losing his mind over this whole glove thing. He can't believe it happened.
Very upset.
It just blew up in you know, Darton's face. So.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was
which is such a bummer. But I love that he did mention the latex part because we all said it last week also. He's like,
he didn't put his thumb down, and he wasn't, you know, and gloves shrink all the time. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
every
absolutely.
Winter when I pull out my leather gloves, I'm like, wait, did I grow? What happened? Yep. You know, when you're going to New York
but
or
you know
something.
What? It's a California case, right? So it's like, we're not, people on the West Coast weren't used to putting on gloves and knowing that they shrink
That's
or anything
a great
like that.
Point.
So these jurors are going, it doesn't fit.
It was just a demonstration, too. Yeah. So it's just very much visual and the defense knew that, and they sort of baited him into that, and you know.
And I loved that line from Gil Garcetti where, you know, the jury doesn't care about DNA. They saw a glove, it didn't fit.
Yes.
Especially when this was the beginning of our DNA evidence in courtrooms.
Well, I always say, this is pre-CSI. Yeah. Nobody knew about DNA and how, you know, and then that TV show came out and everyone was like, oh, the follicles of the hairs didn't match and the, you know.
And now everybody's like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're sitting there looking at charts and, you know, it's just mind-numbing.
And that's the funny part, because as a lawyer today, it's so difficult to get a conviction without DNA. Because now the jury expects it. They've been watching CSI.
That's right.
They know that it's supposed to be this DNA and that profile and that profile. But if they don't see it, they want to think you're not guilty.
Wow.
So it's the flip.
Funny, too. The character, Barry Scheck, who plays that lawyer that was sort of cross-examining Fung, he is now very much known for the Innocence Project. And he gets... convicted felons out that are innocent.
We're talking about Barry Scheck in reality.
Because of DNA.
He's sharp, that dude.
He's very sharp, but it's just funny that this is the sort of, not the beginning of his career, but what he's known for, but really his mission in life is getting people off with DNA evidence.
But the thing is, though, because of the complexity that they went into with the DNA, so it's not that the DNA was very persuasive, but they went into so much detail.
They thought that it would help, and you know, know, it's like talking to somebody that's just too smart for their own good, and you know, you just want to hear like Dr. Phil saying, "Hey, if it, you know, if love doesn't fit, you must quit." You know, you just want to hear that simple, the simple, and that was what was so great about Johnny Cochran. He could, you know, as they say in our show, you know, relate to a downtown audience, is how they said, or you can communicate with a downtown kind of like audience. And it's more just, it's just so that you can understand it and hear it. And I think that with the glove, they want, he wanted to do, make something showy happen, and it just backfired.
Yeah.
Crazy. So we get into the juries, how they're arguing between watching Seinfeld or Martin.
Yeah. I know.
That was great, though, because those were two fantastic shows during the same time that completely had to do with like two different cultures.
But did you notice that the scene after that, OJ was like talking about a Seinfeld episode?
No.
I missed that.
Oh, you missed that? So then OJ says, oh, and that Kramer, he needs his own spinoff. That's the thing.
Yeah. Because
there was like the black and then the white, and then OJ's like, Seinfeld.
Exactly. Oh.
Yeah, it was culture, not race, you know?
Yeah, so. Very much.
It was.
It was a big divide. Yeah. But the same thing, I remember calling it Steinfeld. Like, I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know
what hated that show. I couldn't understand.
Yeah, but now I love it, but I didn't get it back then. But yet, everybody knew Martin.
Everybody knew. Well, not everybody, but. Was off the air. Right.
I watched.
No, Martin was. Yeah. That's the one that I understood. Yeah. Seinfeld. I thought that was too old for me.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It was too old for me. Yeah. Exactly.
So they're in the jail playing poker with Skittles, which I thought was hilarious.
I know.
That's cute. Oh, poor guy. Who were the friends that were with him?
They were like buddies.
Okay.
His Brentwood buddies.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or remember, as he said, Kardashian said, "Oh, they're
your witnesses or something."
Yeah. But that was just how he got his friends in to hang out with them. But they didn't always come.
You know, I'm sure they didn't.
You lost a lot of friends.
I bet you Bobby had to say, you know, guys, please come through with me.
There's an episode where he's like, where are they?
Right. Where's Bob? Where's this? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember.
Let's talk about the DNA trial, Mr. Fung.
Fung.
I know, poor guy.
Poor guy, they ripped him apart.
I know, he starts shaking people's hands as he leaves.
That was nuts.
And Darton's face. Why is he shaking their hands?
I know.
He just seemed so confused.
Yeah. He was so confused and didn't, you know, he just got taken down. I mean, but you didn't see, because we did so much research, you know, of course. Right. And I watched the whole trial, real trial. And in real life, when he's cross-examining, they're showing images of him not using gloves when he's, you know, they like froze it when he was getting handed something and he didn't have a glove on. Like, they took Fung down.
Oh, my gosh.
Very shack. So it was hard on him to be the DNA expert. And,
oh, man.
And it just got, you know, the defense was very good.
And that was that was a huge moment, because that was what Marcia was pinning the rest of her case.
Everything.
She's like, well, you can't argue with DNA.
Yeah.
She
thought she had the gloves, but when they found out that Nicole had bought them, you know, and the shoes and the whole bit, and then now the DNA. I mean, it just gets taken. You can see, as you watch the show, it was a slam dunk case in the beginning. Everybody thought, oh, hands. And now people, I hope, the viewers can understand how.
Why it turned out the way that it did.
Everyone's like, how could that happen? Yeah. I'm like, you said that. Yeah. You were like, well, I thought that maybe he would, you know.
This was the episode, because I've been trying to assess his guilt based on per episode, just how it goes. And this episode, you know, even the glove didn't fit, but the DNA evidence was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And after the Fung cross, I said, well,
but you go back and forth every time.
But after the Fung cross, I said, well, now the glove didn't fit. I go back to the glove at this point because I can't rely on that evidence.
Mm-hmm. Gosh. I'm going to cut real quick to do this. Curious about a celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis.
Yes.
Are you? Enjoy hearing stories about behind the scenes of Hollywood.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Amused by old TV and movie references.
Always.
Then you'll love The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. Join AfterBuzz creator and Maria Menounos' fiance, Kevin Undergaro, along with AfterBuzz co-hosts Roxy Stryer, Ashley Daniels, and others for all of the insanity. Watch live Monday and Thursday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time on thetomorrowshow.com, or subscribe and download free on iTunes. Go to thetomorrowshow.com for more information. Back to Mr. Fung.
I have a question. Someone said here, laugh aloud, did they add the fortune cookie scene?
The fortune? What was the fortune cookie scene?
Oh, so that must have been something that had to do with the real trial then.
Yeah.
Sorry, but just so you all know, I am on the live chat
roll. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They
what said
thought that they would add that in. Yeah, we don't know.
You know, for me, when they were doing that whole DNA thing and when it got so complex, from a psychological perspective, because I've done a lot of speaking over the years, trained a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists, and a concept called anchoring, which is essentially stimulus response. And when you reverse engineer stimulus response, you can make a deeper impact in the neurology of a human being if you can make something more succinct and powerful. So they were all over the place with the prosecution. But then when the defense comes up and uses what we call a phrase anchor, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. At the end of the day, that's the one thing that you think of that phrase, and that won the case for them. That was it. So the simplicity of the demonstrations on the defense side versus what the prosecution was attempting to demonstrate is what won the case.
I don't think that's what won the case. I think the defense just really piece by piece took apart all the prosecution's witnesses. I mean, because Fung was the best one.
He was good.
And to watch them take him apart, that to me wins the case.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, the DNA, the one thing that stood out in everybody's mind was that one. I mean, when anybody that watched the trial, if you go back and you think about it, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. That's enough.
People still remember that.
But I think that's from a lay perspective. I think the jurors, if Fung's testimony was not taken down the way it was, I think they go guilty.
They just had to instill reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
That's all that they had to do. So they just had to cause doubt in every single little tiny.
And they were just able to kind of like.
And so you just, it just raises a question so that you can't then convict a man of murder if you have a little bit of doubt. And that's our justice system. And they just knew how to do that. Mm-hmm. And the prosecution was exhausted. They were just exhausted and missed a few things and they tried on the glove and. You know, certain witnesses were thrown out because they had sold their stories. I mean, it was not easy, and the defense it was a dream team. They never got tired.
Yeah, and that missing blood. That's what I was just like.
So there were three things Czech brings up, right? Yeah. So missing blood, the fact that the blood was handed to them.
Yeah.
By
the LAPD, yeah.
Okay. And then the blanket that they used to cover Nicole's body obviously has his DNA on it. Yeah. So.
And Van Adder took the blood overnight, never done before in his history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, that wasn't blood. It was
the shoes. Was it the shoes he took to,
Was it the shoes?
Trunk.
Was it the blood?
No, that is ridiculous. And that was, it was excessive. And again, like we all just mentioned earlier, it was these things specifically that you're like, oh.
We're like, what if the blood was missing? Or if now, how did they get the blood in the Bronco, in the socks, on the gate, when the blood, OJ's blood hadn't been taken till the next day? I mean, you remember the episode last week when Marsha tries to break it all down.
That was the thing. We never see her do that in the trial.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. You wish you would have pulled out those shot glasses in the middle of the courtroom.
That was it, right?
All that going to happen when everyone's watching? Now, something could have been planted. Yeah. Something could have been mishandled. People may have padded the, but it doesn't explain it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once you've created the narrative, the LAPD is doing something wrong, and now we have missing blood. And now the jury, we saw, is already feeling there's racial tension amongst them.
But it was Los Angeles. I mean, I'm from here, and I lived here during the riots, 1992. I was at John Burroughs Junior High School, where Sean Chapman went as well, which is so cool.
You went to John Burroughs?
Yeah, I went
in
to
Burbank?
No, John Burroughs Junior High, which is at, it's on, 6th and Wilshire.
Oh, okay.
We're not 6th. It's in between 6th and Wilshire.
Here.
Interesting. Near Highland. It's L.A.
Mid-Wilshire.
Hancock Park.
Oh, there you go.
It's a junior high. I was in 7th grade. So now you can count my age. Even though you already said how old I was.
Yeah, I blew it.
But no, I was here in 92 and it was very much a racial divide. I grew up in Koreatown and I remember just when the tanks rolled in, literally there were tanks. Can you imagine a tank coming down Wilshire Boulevard? Wow. A tank. So, and the first day it was sort of buzzing, getting going. The second day we were put off school, and then the third day the tanks rolled in and they were shutting it down. So it was crazy. And this is 2 years later.
Right.
Wow.
Tanks. I didn't remember
tanks.
That part.
So you know where Crenshaw hits Wilshire and dead ends and there's like a Masonic temple.
Right? Yep.
There were tanks there.
That's
crazy. You are not coming into Hollywood.
Yeah.
Even though the stuff got burned down in Koreatown where I lived, it was everywhere. So this was a very racially charged time. And the LAPD needed to be exposed for their corruption. And that, I think, was Johnny Cochran's mission.
Right.
Bigger than O.J. Simpson was to expose the LAPD.
Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, but the thing is I had something good to say and I totally lost it.
You know what happened? Age will do
it's
that
injustice.
To you.
It's injustice.
My girl Angel got me right now.
She loves it.
You're in your 40s.
Somewhere up there, you know.
So let's talk about how...
I'm looking forward to my 40s. I'm going to be great in my
40s. You're going to be... 40s
are the new 30s.
Hey, man.
Thank
I'm going to tell more people how I really feel.
Yeah.
I'm going to be one of those crickety old ladies, but I'm still going to look good.
So Judge Ito starts bringing in the jurors one by one because they're finding these things out about them. Yeah. I mean, one of them was charged with domestic abuse mm-hmm. for kidnapping his girlfriend.
Yeah. He just put her in the car and drove around the block a couple times.
The trunk or the...
Right? And then later we see the lady comes in who was unfortunately
who called
raped
her
by her
yeah.
husband.
Yeah. But it wasn't rape in
1988. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. That was no, I know. No, of course it was. But that was just crazy the way he sat there and said it. And I was like,
did you see that look that Sarah Paulson gave him? Marsha gave him?
It
was like
out of disgust. Yeah.
And she actually said that. She said, you didn't just say that, did you?
He's got to argue the law.
Right,
and
of course.
And so he's got to tell the judge, look, legally, this was not considered that. So,
right.
I know lawyers, man. Lawyers.
And Effie Bailey, I mean, he was like a law book.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
You know, he was like the equivalent of the internet online.
Now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, what
God,
happened?
God, and I love him, though. Well, I mean,
series
I guess I love
things.
This actor, really,
yeah.
but...
Series of things. Yeah, he's disbarred.
Huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, the defense, most of them have... not fared well.
Yeah.
Well,
it's actually... Yeah,
well, Sean Chapman, she's on top of the world.
Yeah, and Cochran, until he passed, was doing very
well. But he died a very terrible
early,
death.
Yeah.
And it's been hard for a lot of them. Barry Scheck is still, you know, still known for this, but he's, you know, the great work he's done, you know, hopefully will be his legacy.
How about, did you have a lot of contact with the real people
with
after
Sean?
The word?
Yeah,
yeah, with Sean and with...
Oh, yeah, I met Sean, and she had me over.
Oh, wow.
She's great.
Yeah,
she's fantastic. They have to do the people versus Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah,
and
that'll
then
be.
I'll come in and
front
play
and center.
Her.
Yes.
That's Sean Chapman.
Lindsay
Lohan's.
You know,
Sean Chapman Holly. Yeah,
I was in
Sean,
rehab. With
well,
Lindsay
she's
Lohan.
She's now Sean Holly.
Yeah.
Right, but still, that's
hers. Yeah. You remember her, Lindsay Lohan and her lawyer and all the things, you know, all that's shot. That's the same woman.
Yeah,
she's fantastic. Oh. She's
dang, she stayed right there.
Oh yeah, she works in a lot of celebrity defense, but she's just dynamic and powerful.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Super successful.
I was in Betty Ford with Lindsay Lohan. With Lindsay.
With Sean. I was like, with Sean?
With Sean.
Oh, like, with Lindsay. Sean. Yeah, no, Lindsay's doing great. You never hear about people when they're doing great.
Right,
yeah,
of course. Right, yeah. But they want to hear about your problems.
Oh, yeah. No. She's doing
it's a good
great.
Incentive to have lots of problems. For some. Yeah.
So let's talk about this jury, you know, alternates. Mm-hmm. Shaka, shed some light on that for us.
Well, just... in terms of the process itself, they had 12 jurors and they had 12 alternates. And the alternates are treated like jurors. So they go through the entire process as if, you know, they are jurors, but their vote, they take no vote when the final count comes. What I didn't know was that they got down to four alternates.
That's crazy.
So that really shows you the gamesmanship that was played on both sides to start to eliminate, you know, jurors that weren't favorable.
Yeah, but you don't want to...
They only had four remaining alternates? Is that
yeah, at one point.
Because they started
okay.
to get rid of so many, but you get down to none, and it's a mistrial.
Wow. Yeah.
You got to start all over again.
And I think we saw, they knew that if the... Or Effley says to Cochran, if this is a mistrial, he'll be convicted.
Yep.
Because all those little things that went in their favor were because they caught the prosecution off guard.
Exactly.
And so if they come in prepared and ready, it's not going to look good.
And it's funny because in the civil trial, they find pictures of OJ wearing the Bruno Magli shoes. I mean,
which they didn't have
for the criminal trial.
Wow.
And the gloves. They have pictures of him wearing the gloves, pictures of him wearing the shoes.
Yeah, the gloves. I mean, there's a size large, extra large is what the gloves were.
Yeah.
So that's the size it takes for an extra large hand.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Rob.
Kardashian?
This was low-key his episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just was so...
He's breaking down.
He is. He's breaking down.
Breaking
numbers,
down tormented.
He keeps saying the numbers throughout this episode. He's one out of 170 million. I mean, that's hard to swallow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we see him later on with Chris, and I didn't expect him to say, you know, he's going to be out of our lives. I didn't know at that point that he was so fed up.
Right.
I thought it'd be maybe I'm sure much later
like,
on.
I've said this before, and I'm going to keep saying that. Like, you know your friends. And even though, like, I mean, not... I'm sure there have been plenty of cases in history where you get really surprised and you would never think someone would do something like that. But OJ, the Juice, had such a very distinctive and strong personality. Like you said, he's known him for 20 plus years. Yeah. It's one of those things. And he knows Nicole, and he knows the dynamic, and he's always been around them. And that's like his whole question was, who else would have done it? No right. one would have done that. Like, no one hated on Nicole like that. She didn't have that much of a lifestyle. And, like, OJ and her been through some stuff. And I'm willing to bet that Bobby has split them up before during, like, a physical fight. You know? Because, yeah. like, there are friends who are around, like, couples who are like that back in the day. I feel like I grew up seeing that between, like, you know, aunts and uncles and parents and stuff like that, where, like, they get in the way and the kids have to go to the room. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, everyone's just fighting.
Right, so, chill out, everybody.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you know, so that's all I could keep playing in my head is that they know that. And then whatever Chris knows about the things that Nicole used to tell her, of course Chris would confide in Bobby. And I'm just saying, there's just too much that we knew about him. So it broke my heart to hear him say, like, I have to sit there. Like, remember what we were saying? Like, he's a good friend. Like, and
he's a good friend.
And he was protecting his family, though, too. Like he said, it would have just blown up in their face, like, twice as hard.
Yeah, to watch him have that crisis of conscience and then still have to just look at the bigger picture and stay. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely, I thought, his episode where you really saw the emotional complexity of Robert mm-hmm. Kardashian.
Yeah.
Emotional complexity and torture. Like, he seemed to really be tortured, because here he was, and that's what you get from the inside. He was saying, I know everything. I know all the evidence. I'm seeing it from the defense side, and I think he's guilty. There's
like,
no
we'll,
doubt
we'll
about it.
We'll take care of it. No, don't mm-hmm. worry. We'll, yeah. we got right. this. We got this.
And yet he's such a good friend to OJ, because what does he say? He's like, yeah, they're asking. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah, but I see Schwimmer's acting there, and he's playing both. He's so brilliant. You know? He's like saying, I'm asking.
Yes.
Right.
He's just...
That's what he said. This was a great role for him.
So great. But I've seen, I mean, his journey. It's sort of that quiet kind of friend, but it's... You know, and you'll see next week, and then the final episode.
I know all at the beginning we were all saying, "Oh, it's Ross. How can we, you know, how can we look
Which
at Ross?"
He's a great friend. Come on, he'll be there for you. But David Schwimmer is a wonderful actor.
It just expanded his range for us as an audience.
Yes, I hope that that's the case. But he's
for sure.
And, he's fantastic. He's got a theater in Chicago. He's a wonderful actor. So,
and if anything, he made me think OJ did it when I looked at the evidence. This episode, I came to the conclusion OJ possibly just did not do this. There's too much doubt. But then I looked at his performance, and you think to yourself, your best friend knows you. They're trying to be on your side. Mm-hmm. If he thinks you're guilty, you might just be guilty.
Right. People said that. Well, when the verdict is read, his face just...
I replayed that over and over again. It's just...
But they knew. They knew that he was going to be found not guilty because of, like, the paperwork and how it is and how they dismissed the jury. You know, no one was surprised.
So they
But I think it's still just hearing it out loud. Pardon me?
They saw it coming in advance.
Yes, of, like, the paper, you know, it's kind of like if you get accepted to college, like you're waiting for your college acceptance letter, and either you get the envelope that says no, or you get the package with the... You know what I'm talking about? When you get accepted to college, you're like, if I get the... You know, of course, it may be different nowadays, you know, in my... Back in the day.
No, it's exactly...
But, you know, you get the envelope, or you get the package with all the paperwork, and so it's sort of one of those kind of things. They knew... And it happened so quickly. The jury deliberated for 4 hours.
Yeah.
That's not long.
Yeah. On the chat roll, Jessica Sadis, she goes, Rob knew of OJ's guilt, and then she made a funny comment. You're funny, girl. She said, I need a Rob K kind of friend in my life. He's a down-ass bato.
Yeah.
Down-ass bato.
And then we have another one. Griffin said that OJ was around when Robert was going through his hard time, so he's naturally going to be loyal to him, but the stress with all the evidence is, like, weighing on him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if he looked out for him before, he's trying to look out for him.
I mean, but you have a best friend. I mean,
it is what it is. You do it no matter
what. Yeah, I mean, even AC people saying, how would he just get in the car and just drive him, you know, if there was money in the car, just guys in the car? And I'm like, there's friends that would say, I need your help, let's go. Yeah. And you would just, no
ride
questions
or die,
asked.
That's what the...
No questions asked. You'd be like, okay, I'm here for you.
You got a question, though. What would be the legal responsibility of the friend that does that?
Accessory.
They could be accessory, but if they have knowledge of what's happening, if they don't
accessory
know what's
after
happening,
the fact,
if they're caught up in the confusion of the moment, is there any kind of a defense that could be?
If they don't know what they're doing,
well, they tried to try AC, and in the beginning we talked talked about that, and then they ended up dropping the case as an accessory. But
they couldn't get him to turn on OJ, right?
No, you don't really hear much about AC Cowlings now. You don't really.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, this affected so many people's lives.
Right.
It's just,
that's the one thing we keep hearing that ticks me
out.
Yeah,
it's not a positive time in any one of these people's lives. So. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about juror 452. Who is
that?
Tracy.
Who's
Aaliyah
Tracy?
Lookalike.
That lost her mind. She took her shoes off.
She prepped for it and her jacket.
We rewound that one. Remember, I was like, wait, what happened? Rewind again. Let me see what. Because I'm so interested in the acting and how the actors sort of get to that moment.
Yeah, we've never rewound or talked so much as with you.
It was so great to hear all the insides, you know, like all the little things that you mentioned, the stuff about the music and
that's the thing too, is that music's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The music, the rights to that, and what songs they choose. Remember the Bronco Chase when it was Sabotage?
Yeah.
Like the Beastie Boys don't give out their music.
Right.
And so, you know, for them to approve it or pay for it, and it's a big deal, you know, when you're watching these shows. And then even Johnny Cochran in this episode sings, "Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier," and they have to pay for that. And I remember shooting it, and we shot it with that song, and then we shot it with him singing something else,
just in case. Yeah,
just in case.
Yeah,
the music. Wow.
You see it a lot on Netflix a lot. So a lot of your old shows that you watch on Netflix, a lot of times you watch them and the songs are different. Even the theme songs are different.
Yeah, because I've noticed that. Yeah, don't make fun of me, but with Dawson's Creek, it's not, I don't want to wait.
Nobody's making fun of you, girl.
Yeah, it's all the music rights.
No, it turns that, what season are you on?
No.
It's on like five.
It's the musical rights. That's why they can use it.
I did that. I read a couple of books. In my first book, I took the lyrics from Elvis Presley's If I Can Dream, and I wrote the lyrics out inside that book, and they charged me. They said, we'll charge you X amount, but if your book sales go over this, then
we're gonna
it was a scary prospect because if you get the success that you want, you continue to pay.
So Tracy number 452 goes to Lance Ito and says they're treating us unfairly, you know. They gave the others an hour at Target, we got half an hour at Ross. She makes this statement, and he takes it very seriously and says, okay, we'll switch out the deputies, the shift or whatever. So they go in the next day, and we see a whole new set of cops looking after the jurors. Let's talk about the lady who was dressed in all black. Mm-hmm. What was her motive? What was she doing?
What was that all about?
Oh, the foreman.
I think she was just very calm and collected the entire time, understood the situation. But then once they switched out even the deputies, I think she just felt like, okay, now you guys are just playing us. Like, this is too much.
Mm-hmm. What they brought up at some point, Stockholm Syndrome. What was that in regards to?
Just them all going crazy.
So basically, you take on the mentality of your captor. So is it that they're, you know, they've been captured by the prosecution, now they're like all, you know, with the prosecution side, or what's happening? So that's...
She picked up them eggs and was done. Johnny eggs. And she was like, I'm done. But she was already in black, I think, at that point.
She was already.
Yeah, they were just, boy, you know, you just want to feel like you have some sense of power. And I can't imagine when that power's taken away that you've got to sit there and choose between two TV shows with a group forever, you know, what feels like forever.
And what was... Like, that struck me is from the outset with the jury, they're referring to them by number. They're not treating them like people.
They're like inmates. Yeah. They are in prison as well.
452.
Give me
that book. You might get it back.
Once a week conjugal visits. I mean, can you imagine not being with your spouse for 8 months? And
there was somebody counting the conjugal visits.
It was crazy. So.
For a book. And that was true, too. I remember at the time.
People wrote books, people showed up on TV. I mean, it was the beginning of all of that, you know, news media coverage of... reality.
So OJ wants to testify.
Oh my God.
Never, let me on that stand.
Yeah. Never a good idea.
That's a lie. Sorry.
Well, because your client can always hurt themselves. It's very rare where they can help themselves in that situation. Whether or not they're guilty of the crime, they can just hurt themselves on cross. And so you want to keep your client away from the stand.
Just through the way they show up energetically or in the perception of the jury.
Because of cross-examination. Once you put your client on the stand who's not a savvy legal person, they might open the door
on
cross-examination. Now, you know, for instance, Marsha could ask all about the past domestic violence, and he might give answers that do not resonate well with the jury.
Or specifically his personality.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to understand his... you know, pompous ass, the way he was acting in the jail cell.
Right.
Now, the way we were how we had mentioned, we wonder about which parts of these scenes are true or not, you know, considering, I mean, I guess all the lawyers were there for when they did that mock trial with him.
Yeah.
But I just really wonder if those were like his types of reactions, like his little grin and stuff, you know? Yeah.
It would make sense that it would be, you know, he had a air of cockiness about him, and
O.J. Simpson was a very dynamic, very confident person.
And to have a woman interrogating him, you know,
I just think
that looked kind of like Marcia Clark. Yeah, they did all that.
Yes. You try to mimic that scenario, but I think he was very charismatic, so he knew that on a direct, he would be able to kind of carry the jury.
Yeah.
It's on that cross-examination when they get you and they pin you to a wall. How are you going to react? And we already know he's got an anger problem.
Mm-hmm. Do we really want to see if they could push him to that point.
So I have no doubt he would have charmed them to some degree, but on cross-examination, too many X factors.
Yeah, and I wonder if he was even responding the way that he was, thinking that he was going to seem lighthearted, like, oh, you see, look at how
he's
nice
so
I am.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like, no, you need to be much more sensitive about these and all these questions and have to be serious.
And not be dismissive.
Exactly.
Yeah, and if you're not clued up from a legal perspective, you don't know what trap you're falling into. Yeah, you think you got it all made.
As we already saw with Furman, so we'll see how that comes back to hit him. But yeah, he fell nicely into that legal trap.
Yeah, but Furman does well. He doesn't get rattled, you know. That's why Marcia Clark felt so confident putting him on the stand.
Yeah.
Was because she's like, he did well in his mock trial or, you know, whatever it was called. And always had the same story. I'm not going to say he was a great cop.
A good cop on the stand. On the stand when he testified, he was good in that.
Yeah, we can't say he was a great cop, I don't think.
We can't even say he was a decent cop.
But it sounds like procedurally he was sound. So
Exactly. Procedurally he was sound. He was on paper.
Yeah.
You know, but next week when they hear those tapes,
yeah, and I don't think those tapes come in unless Effley gets him into that little hole on cross-examination. Oh, so you've never used this word.
Yes, that was amazing.
And that's what gets him to set up bringing in people to bring in other evidence to show that he had said these things or did things that were against that.
And then at the end of this episode, McKenna, the private investigator...
The OJ tip line.
Well, no, he really did his work, though, this McKenna guy.
Yeah, is it McKenna or McKinney? So it's a little confusing. I think he's McKenna, and the tapes were recorded by a woman named McKinney.
Who was writing a book.
Who was writing a book, making a, writing a script, a screenplay
about
cops, and she interviewed Mark Furman for that, and that's why she had all these taped recordings of him. And he was telling stories of being a police officer.
What are the odds?
That's what we're seeing next week, isn't it?
That's what we see next week.
Are the
odds? That's what we hear next week.
Yeah. Oh my God,
and they're sickening
because
we had to listen to them as actors. They're sickening.
Yeah.
Are they? Are they of actual Furman?
They're of actual.
How much did you review the entire case while you were prepping for this?
I watched and read everything.
Really? So all over, I mean, there was a lot of material.
Yeah, I watched and read everything. I had time to prep. I knew I had the role. So I read a lot, like crammed when I had the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And watched everything that Sean Chapman had ever done that was online. And then when I got the role, and briefed myself on the trial. I remember because my mom watched the trial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you come home, I was older. I was in high school.
Right.
So I remember, but you remember the glove doesn't fit. You must have quit. You know, you remember the sort of points. But I watched the entire trial. You can watch the whole thing on YouTube. I remember I was going out to Palm Springs for a girls' weekend and stuck in traffic, and I just had it in my auxiliary and my phone there because it's so damn boring. You don't have to watch it. But I remember listening. That was when I listened to F. Lee Bailey's cross because it's actually like 8 hours. These things are long. And I remember just being like, wait, what? And same deal. Like, rewind? What? So it was fascinating. And I read, of course, Tubin's book. There's a lot of books about the defense that I read, so it was just.
Now was speaking of Tubin's
book, there's YouTube,
book.
You know, YouTube. Yeah. It's all on YouTube.
You mentioned that it wasn't just from Tubin's book that this series was drawn.
No, it's based on Tubin's book
primarily,
100% based on his telling of the story. But the writers read every book because you can't. You need to sort of know everyone's sort of perspective, and then. You know, Sarah Paulson's reading Marcia Clark's book. You know, Sterling Brown is reading Chris Darden's book. But then they each read each other's book. Like, everyone read everything. It was sort of like, whose book is on whose chair right now?
Mm-hmm.
When three people's books say that this particular thing happened, this behind-the-scenes meeting happened, then you know it's true.
Yeah.
So they were very thorough. to get everything
you
right.
Really did prep though, because you're like ridiculously informative. That's great. You saw, she sounds like Michael Freeman over here.
Thank you. No, you have to. And it's funny because I don't even have a big part, but it's just you want to not, you want to know what's going on, you know?
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember Sean Chapman saying to me how hard it was to have to be there every day and have the Goldmans over her right shoulder. And we shot a lot because we did a lot of the Cochran firm. We did a lot. We didn't get into the courtroom. You asked earlier, or when we were watching, where we shot. And we shot on two sound stages at Fox, on the Fox lot. So the courtroom was on one sound stage, and the other sound stage was the offices, the DA attorney, and Cochran's firm. So we would go back and forth. So by the time we got to the trial, you walk in, it was all built exact. The wood, there was a ceiling, and usually there's not ceilings.
That's right. It's like open lights.
Yeah, it's open lights, but they wanted that sort of look of the lighting of the court. I mean, it was all so legit. And I remember because we couldn't meet at first because they didn't really want us reaching out to our people. And when we finally kind of the reins were lifted to meet our people.
That was midway through the filming, or was it?
Pardon me?
Where were you? At what point was that?
It was probably halfway through.
About halfway through?
Yeah. Maybe a third of the way through. And I just remember her saying they were right over my right shoulder. And then I remember sitting in the trial or sitting in the courtroom, and they're right there because it's true to size. And I was like, that's what she was talking about. Like, the Goldmans are right behind me. So when she does her big cry that everyone knows is so famous when her hair flips down, and they're just sobbing and they're right over your right shoulder. And so I didn't understand what she meant by that. She goes, it's hard to be there every single day and you got the Goldmans over your right shoulder. And then I'm sitting there and I was like,
they were literally
over the right shoulder. Damn.
Over your right shoulder. I mean, one row behind you. Just sitting there.
After doing all that, what are your feelings toward about the Goldmans and their...
They lost their child. That's something you never want to go through.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's terrible. It's a sensational story, but two people were brutally murdered.
Yeah.
Right. And Nicole was my age, as we now know, but that Inuan had two young children, which I have, and it's just to be 35, I think she was 36 actually, and to lose your life in that way. I mean, she was nearly decapitated.
Yeah.
And Ron Goldman was stabbed like 26 times and stabbed after he was dead. I mean, he was fighting for his life, for her life. He was, it's just no way to go.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'd hate to end it on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but it's true. If we're going to end it on something, let's remember what this is all about.
Sure. Quick question. What struck me was a scene in the last episode where Marsha walks in and she just feels like she's in this boys' club. Did you feel that on set of the idea that they were alone as women, that they were just felt like
100%,
they were...
100%. Yeah. 100%. And it took a while for Sarah and I to warm up to each other because she was so focused and she was shooting two TV shows. And I was very much just like, don't fall down. Like, don't say anything stupid. Don't fall down. And I would just watch her. And I'm sure she could feel me watching her. And she's like, this girl. And then, we warmed up and were, very close by the end. But it was very much this boys thing. And they sort of touched on that in episode 6 at the end when she's being ridiculed for her hair.
Yeah.
They would sort of cut to me as a woman just how
feel that,
you could feel just your heart goes out to another woman that's trying to do this. Or there's times when we were acting, and I don't know if the camera picks that up, but we would be in scenes together. Sean and Marsha would make eyes with each other. There's no way that you don't. You're the only women in the room that you don't make eyes with each other. So as actors, we in our roles, we definitely had that dynamic. And who knows if it shows up on the show.
It does, absolutely.
But it's very much that. It's kind of like two black people being in the room. Yeah, only black people in the room, you notice each other. You kind of say, hey, what's up? Hey, okay, we're here. Being a woman and, in the boys' club, you understand that. And it's hard.
And what was behind it energetically for you as an actor as you're looking in her eyes?
Oh my God, Sarah Paulson's looking at me. Oh my God! No. It's more, you're in character. You're just sort of, that was a good point that was made or whatever the scene. Yeah. It was a lot of times when we were in Ito's chambers. Mm. It's just like, okay. And you sort of just, it's you sizing each other up and you're all in this small space. Yeah. They were so close to each other and we're at war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now that
for
you're wrapped, what are you up to?
Oh, I just booked a show for NBC called Trial and Error about a man who kills his wife.
Wait a minute.
It's a comedy. It's a comedy with John Lithgow, who I love.
Yes.
So I get to get back to sort of the comedy side because I did a Disney show for many years, and so I love, you know, that's
Mama
a great.
Labrats.
Oh, yeah, Labrats. Oh, you know Labrats.
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. Labrats. I was on Labrats. Yeah, so I played the mom on the show.
Yeah.
Mom of teenagers.
You're like, wait a minute.
Stretch. But to get back to doing a comedy, this is a single camera comedy, kind of close to Parks and Rec and The Office kind of vibe. So we'll see if that goes. But I get to shoot that, and so it's exciting.
Very nice.
Exciting time. But I'm still so proud of OJ. Everywhere I go, people are talking about it. I was there somewhere today. I was at the hair shop, and they said, "Are you guys watching OJ?" And then it's sort of this pause of like, are they going to love it or hate it? And then, of course, someone ruins it. They're like, "She's on it." So
that probably would have been me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, well, y'all better start applauding.
But people want to talk about it, and I love talking about it. And I love talking about acting, and I love talking about. So it's all good.
So it's meaningful. It's meaningful to you as a project. To have been involved in.
Hands down. It was a huge stepping stone in my career, and just to be in a room with those actors and being able to work with them and see how they work and then understand, you know, it gives me a confidence moving forward into my next projects. And just fantastic. I mean, Ryan Murphy, my goodness, you don't get better than that right now in television.
Yep.
So it's like working with Norman Lear back in the day, you know, it's one of the greats.
Where can everybody find you on social media?
Oh, my name, Angel Parker. On Instagram, I'm Angel Parker LA because some other girl got Angel Parker.
I feel
but
you.
She's
Me
cool.
Too.
I follow her and I like her pictures.
All right.
She's cool. All right. She's all right. She lives in New York.
Oops.
But so Angel Parker. And then what's my Snapchat? I don't know what it is.
Is it Angel Parker?
Well, you'll have to
it
find
might
it
be
because
they gave me. I did one of my first Snapchats with you.
Yay!
Yay. I'm learning.
Great.
Slowly but surely.
And you can all find me on Twitter at Stephanie Georgine, on Instagram at the Stephanie Georgine.
See, I know somebody else.
Yeah.
And you can find me at Saka Strong on Twitter and Instagram.
And at Chris Howard Live for me on Twitter, Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram for me as well at Pega Red. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next week. Bye.
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 From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.